Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Elder Dragon Turtle Podcast. This is me, your host Igor, and with me is...
Miksha.
And also by some kind of heaven's grace, we've managed to actually sucker in Mr. Jason Ault to join us tonight on the podcast.
I thought this was Magic Mike's.
Oh. Well, I can do that certainly, but, you know, sadly this isn't a video cast. Not yet, at least.
How's I can going? Be Aaron.
So, Mr. Jason Ault. So, Mr. Jason Ault, who the hell are you, actually?
That's a good question. I wear a lot of hats in this community. I'm a finance writer for MTG Price. I'm sort of their digital asset manager on MTG Price also. I'm doing the set review from a financial perspective. I write the 75% EDH series on GatheringMagic.com, and I'm a podcaster on two podcasts. One is Brainstorm Brewery, the finance podcast, and the other one is Money Draft, and I don't know what Money Draft is.
So, yeah, I'm really not sure how we managed to actually get you here, but I'm really glad that we did, because I've been following your articles for a long time now, actually, on Gathering Magic.
Yeah, I've been writing the 75% series for about 2 years, and before that I was writing something called Who to Follow, which was great for me and not great for anybody else. No one really read it. But like every time I wrote something nice about people in the community, they're like, oh, I like you now. So that was good for me networking, I think. But yeah. Other than that, it wasn't a whole lot of value to the article series.
I actually remember those articles, funnily enough.
I mean, it was whatever. It was a lot more work than the 75% series, actually. You know, doing a lot of research on people.
Yeah. We're going to touch upon the 70% articles in just a minute, but let's do the thing we do always at the beginning of the cast. Let's talk about our commanders of the week. Jason, you want to start with it, since you're the guest?
Yeah, I'm going to build around the Gitrog monster, a card that was just revealed. Like, the deck I just built was Olivia Valdarin Death Touch. I just rebuilt that. I really like Death Touch with Olivia Valdarin. Stealing their stuff is good, but wiping the whole board is better, usually.
Yeah.
So I like to put, you know, like a Basilisk Collar on a Goblin Sharpshooter or a Quietus Spike on a Deathbringer Thopter and just machine gun the whole table. And then the only creature is like a 12-12 Olivia, and then you wrap the game up pretty quickly. And if you see anything you like, you just put the Death Touch equipment on a different creature and steal it.
Yeah.
I never thought about quite a spike on Deathbringer Thopter. I need to get it now.
Yeah, there are quite a few equipment that grant Death Touch. There's like Gorgon's Flail and Gorgon's Head, I think, from Theros Block, and quite a spike, Basilisk Collar. Yeah, it's plus Quietus Spike is just good on your general. If you hit them, it halves their life total when you crack them. It ends the game pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was working on. I sort of took that apart, but I rebuilt it because it wasn't competitive, but it was super fun. But seeing the Gitrog monster, like, in the absence of them spoiling a red green werewolf, which I don't know if they're gonna do at this point. Because it probably wouldn't have been mythic anyway, but I think there are almost, I think they spoiled almost all the mythics, so I'm still holding out hope. But the Gitrog monster looks like a really good build around. You know, the fact that it makes you sacrifice a land isn't even that much of a drawback, because you're basically just, you know, drawing a card on your upkeep and getting a Titania trigger. So you want to play this with cycling lands, because you draw two cards off of cycling lands. Dredging is going to be amazing when you get, you know, when you skip one of your draw triggers to dredge your life from the loam. You're going to throw some lands in the graveyard and draw cards that way. This card's just amazing. You're gonna really get through a lot of your deck. You play Crucible Worlds probably. The only thing I don't like is I really wish I had something like Seismic Assault for this deck. But really, like, even if it's just Worm Harvest, that, you know, that you're retracing.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really matter what your win condition is. Titania is going to make you a bunch of 5/3 creatures. I saw this card and I'm like, this is exactly what EDH wants.
You know,
this isn't going to do much in standard, I don't think. I don't know. I don't think it'll do much in standard, unfortunately. But
I was happy to yesterday. Nick and I were meeting up just to play a bit EDH, and the whole store was excited about the frog. I love to see people just get that happy and excited because of a spoiler. People were less excited because of the planeswalkers than because of the frog.
I'm not. I don't know how to feel about the planeswalkers. Like, Soren seems good, but like, who needs another black-white Soren? It's just sort of like there are other planeswalkers in the story. Why are we doing another Soren? Why are we doing a 17th Jace?
Because of Jace.
Nahiri, people think Nahiri's weak, but as an EDH player, Nahiri does things that Boros cards don't do well. This really fills a lot of gaps in your Boros deck.
Yeah, that's what Nick Shandai said on the Missing podcast. She really does everything you want in Boros. You get card advantage, you get the removal, and if you get the ultimate, well, I guess you get a dude or an artifact.
Yeah, you get the Blightsteel, and you kill people.
Yeah. Arlan Khor just looks... I think it's deceptively good. Any Planeswalker with that many abilities is worth looking into. And I think this does what you want to do in Gruul decks. If not in EDH, definitely in like Standard and Modern. But I think Arlan Khor is EDH playable also.
Yeah, so, sure.
Yeah, the two new ones I'm pretty excited about.
And Jace isn't just tickling your fancy? No, is he?
He's just a blue Obnixilus.
Yeah.
Yeah, that a lot of people are talking about him just being another Obnixilus.
But that's I don't know that's necessarily a bad thing, because then you have an Obnixilus and a Jace in like an Esper control deck. So, I mean, who hates that? There's so many Jaces, and I never play any of them in EDH. So...
I mean, Jace is solid, and that's all you can say about him. He's not exciting, but he's solid.
He's not going to be $80, but I don't think he'll be 5 either.
Yeah, you'll be happy to draw him, but you won't be like, oh yes, I'm in the game now.
I think the scry before you draw is... I think it's better than people think.
Yeah, that's so good.
I think people are underestimating how good that's going to feel to do that. Like, draw a card is fine, but like, scry draw, I think that's... That's very good.
Yeah, scrying is almost like drawing a card.
I would say scrying one is like draw half a card.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But we kind of drifted apart. I think Mixer was supposed to tell about his commander of the week.
Well, I just have to say that I'm fine with how my Zedru is going on. People still hate her.
Yeah.
And that pretty much stays unchanged. But this time I just packed all of the angels from the vault, and now Zedru can fight back, actually. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, you played that yesterday in 2 games, and in game 2 you were... No, actually, you played it just in 1 game. And in that one game...
Because people keep killing Zedru.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I give things, and people kill me because of that.
Yeah, you give them a transcendence, and then they die. What's their problem?
Actually, he's not even doing that in this deck, funnily enough.
Yeah, I still didn't... I used to run that kind of deck, but then I got rid of those cards, and now I'm making it again, so I don't have those cards like Steel Golem, and, I don't know, I think it's Wrath Crawler, and Aggressive Mining... Not yet.
Aggressive Mining. Nice. Yeah, I love donating stuff. I think Gold Knight Castigator is a new card you might want to donate with Zedru.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute, because we were really happy when that got spoiled. Both Nick and I were just giddy with happiness for Zedru.
So, Igor, what's your commander of the week?
As usual, Alesha is my waifu. She really did a solid one yesterday. Turns out Eldrazi Monument plus Alesha plus Deadring Troctor are fun. Nixa wanted to do the instant speed route, but then he seen the monument and he was like, God damn it. And people were playing enough tokens around so Deadring Troctor could just clear the whole field.
Yeah, Deathbringer Thokter really does work. I'm never
yeah,
sad to draw that.
I was skeptical to put him in Alacia, and I was like, I'm going to test it. And yesterday, he just pulled so much weight.
Yeah, against Prosh especially.
Yeah.
Yep.
Both Prosh and Abhorrent Overlord from, I can't remember what deck it was. Oh, yeah, it was your Phage, the Untouchable.
Oh, that deck. Those rats. Yeah, those pesky rats.
Got yeah, they just got cleared.
You know what? I actually like the idea of building a Phage deck now that we have that land that stops it from killing you.
Yeah, also that.
Yeah, that's one way. But that's not the cool way.
What's the cool way?
Ending your turn.
Oh, yeah,
with
that
Seer's
works.
Sundial.
Yeah.
It's not Seer's Sundial, it's Sundial of the Infinite.
Yeah. Seer's Sundial, not a bad card, though.
Nope. Not at all. And with all these... Well, it seems like in this set, lands are going to be relevant again. So it could even be better for EDH later on.
Yeah, we haven't had a set with lands matter in a while. Like, from yesterday.
Well, here they matter in another way.
Well,
like,
yeah.
In your hand, in your graveyard.
But let us move on, since now let's question our guest a bit. So, first of all, what the heck is 75%, since Nixia was a bit confused by the term. First time he heard it.
I think everybody's a bit confused, and I don't know, some people said change the name, and I'm like, I can't anticipate what people are going to misinterpret, so I'm sticking by the name.
Yeah, the name just clicks when you figure out what it is.
It's if you think of it as qualitative and not quantitative, I think that helps. The genesis of it was I was talking to Adam Staborski, who works for TCG Player now. He was my editor and content manager on Gathering Magic. And he said, hey, nobody's reading Who to Follow. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So he said I should write a different article. He wanted to keep me on as a writer, but he didn't want me to write that series anymore. And he was a guest on the Brainstorm Brewery podcast. And after we finished podcasting, he and I stayed on Skype and with Corbin, and we were just sort of talking. And I said I couldn't get my Shroom deck the way I wanted it. The problem with my Shroom deck was it basically, like, you bitter end people, or you just dirtle with Lux Cannon. I couldn't get it to not do those two things. I couldn't get it to be too slow or too spiky. And I was like, I just want a deck that's not going to be too oppressive for people that are trying to do Lux Cannon type stuff. And I don't want a deck that's too dirtly and I can't beat people that are, you know, playing spiky. So I like to think of my decks as sort of like 75% of the way to a fully powered deck. So if you play well, you know, and get kind of lucky and maybe use some of their spells against them, you're going to be able to beat people with really competitive decks. But you'll probably still win against casual players, but you're not going to, like, completely curb stomp them. Like, they'll feel like they've got a chance. And if you take a fully powered deck and just, like, condescend to a casual player and, like, don't cast the spells correctly and just, like, take it easy on them, that's no fun for you and it's no fun for them because they know that you're, you know, taking it easy on them. So I want the deck to work as a deck that sort of scales to the power level of the table. Therefore, you don't have to leave it in your bag, depending on the group you're playing. And when I'm playing with an unknown group, like, I have a lot of people challenge me to games at GPs and stuff. So I have no idea what power level they're going to play with. So I like to use a 75% deck against a group I don't know, because it's going to be the appropriate power level no matter what.
Yeah, I think we all had that experience when there is like two guys that are spiky, and one that is, you know, somewhere halfway, and the person who just bought a precon.
Yeah.
And that's always a bit nasty.
I mean, a 75% deck can't do much to make a guy with a precon feel like he's in the game. But I don't know. You know what? The precons are getting better. They're
like
actually,
Mirror?
Lately, they're pretty competitive. Like, I wouldn't recommend playing with a precon, but... Like, the number of cards you need to swap out is getting smaller and smaller every year. And they're keeping the deck to still around the same MSRP worth of cards in there. Which, it's... I don't know. It's good. I like the Duretti Precon. You can give actual decks a run for their money, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, you just swap, like, three or four cards and you're in business.
The Prosh deck, three or four cards.
Yeah.
Prosh even had an infinite combo in it.
Yeah, just like that.
Yeah, in the pre-con. It's great. Like, you throw a food chain in the Prosh deck and take out, like, one card, and you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Because it's Prosh, and it's food chains.
Yeah. So, I'm very pleased with what they're doing with the Commander product.
Yeah, the first little... Commander... Finish the thought.
I was just going to say, when I heard they were going to do them every year, I was a little skeptical.
Yeah, the first pre-cons were kind of random, because they were trying to cater to both styles of the commanders that were printed in. The original one and the alternative one commander.
Yeah, it was sort of like, these commanders are broken, and then the deck is terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, here's a bunch of terrible cards in a deck with Animar. You know, they got it dialed in, though, and it didn't take them that many tries to get it to where the
they actually know what they're doing. That's good. So are you excited for this year's Commander product?
I don't know anything. I feel like nobody this time does. Last year we knew it was going to be two color decks, and I don't know anything. I would like it if they were four color decks, because there were no four color commanders. To the extent that people are like, why can't you just errata the Nephilim? So the Nephilim could go in the decks, and each four-color deck could be sort of the theme of the Nephilim, maybe. But I just think it'd be fun to have a four-color commander, because there are people that have four-color decks with five-color commanders and just, like, don't even use that fifth color. I don't know, man. You could have four-color mana rocks somehow. You could have all kind of stuff. So... I really hope they eventually do four color commanders, and the commander precons are pretty much the only way to do that at this point.
Well, I think Maro was talking about that, and he actually addressed that issue about four color commanders. He just they're still working around how to make a four color commander feel like it's four color and not five color with one missing.
Yeah, it's hard to define, actually, what those four colors do when they're bunched up together.
But, I mean, I don't think you want it to feel like there's not a color missing. I think you want to emphasize the color
that's the point.
That's missing. And that would be the flavorful way to do it. Give it a drawback that is based around the color that it's missing. Like, there's something that it can't do very well because it's missing that part of the color pie. I think if you approached it from that angle, it might be a little bit more obvious how to make the card.
I think they're going to go with a lazy approach and give us first ally the guild decks.
Yeah, they might.
It's an obvious thing to do. And it gives them still more time to actually think, what is going to happen with four colors?
What I would like to see is like two colored commanders with two abilities of different colors, so it would go four color because of the
that's actually a good idea. Yeah, like the commanders from Fate Reforged, they're one, yeah, like Alesha, she's one color but she has activated abilities with two color, and she's technically three color general.
Jason, you here?
Yeah.
Oh no, I thought you went away. Okay.
Yeah, I got bored. I only agreed to do your podcast for 20 minutes. That's all you get.
Ah, well then, goodbye, I guess. But no, I actually like that suggestion. Make two color generals, so they're still in the team of allied two color generals, but they can be four color because of the activated abilities.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
That's actually a really elegant solution.
This year we're most likely getting the rest of the two color combinations, and just because of the combinations possible, I'm just hoping that they make blue black ninjas or pirates
or not mill,
and you know, red green worms would be okay. A legendary worm would be okay.
Hint hint, nudge nudge.
Yeah, or the werewolf that they clearly aren't going to put in this set.
Or that, yeah.
Maybe they'll print it in the next set. I mean, it's not too late for that.
What if Arlene loses her spark?
Oh.
Because reasons.
Because tentacles. But anywho, let's go back to questioning Jason. So why do you actually play EDH? What draws you to the format?
Honestly, I just preferred trading with EDH players initially because they, like, standard players want 10 cards at any given time. And if you don't have those 10 cards, they don't want to trade with you at all. So I have, like, 10 three-ring binders, and they're like, oh, do you have Snapcaster Mage? It got really annoying. Whereas EDH players were excited about all the stuff. They wanted the foreign language stuff. They wanted, casual cards. And they didn't care about coming off of those Snapcaster Mages that all the standard players wanted. So trading with EDH players was always the best. And I was trading with a guy, and he just wanted to trade me his whole deck. So that was the first EDH deck I ever had, was one I just basically traded off of a guy. I gave him a bunch
Oh,
of
wow.
standard stuff that was about to go down in price, but he wanted it for FNM. And I got a Shroom deck, and I was kind of
Oh.
hooked after that. I built Maelstrom Wanderer and Omnath, like, that same week. So my first week, I went really deep and I built three decks. And I just had a bunch of stuff laying around that worked really well. That's the great thing about EDH. Like, you build it like Tony Stark in a cave with a box of scraps. Like my $1 rare binder, I was like taking all kind of stuff out. I'm like, man, this card's always been good. Why is nobody playing Mycoid Shepherd in anything? Well, why is nobody playing just all these big, dirtily 5-mana creatures that all of a sudden were really good in Mael? And that was the fourth deck I built that first week. So it was pretty crazy.
Damn, you bit really, really hard into the EDH thing.
Yeah, I like, I don't know. When I played competitive Magic, I got to the point where I thought I always had to win. So instead of liking winning, I was starting to hate losing, and I wasn't having as
Yeah.
much fun playing competitive Magic. Now when I play EDH, it doesn't matter. Like, if I do my thing that I want my deck to do and I still lose the game, I don't care.
Yeah, I only mind the games that I lose that are, just oppressive behind the stacks and all that. Those are the games I hate.
And it's
Anything
like,
else?
okay, fine, and then you just don't play with those people that
Yeah, or just
like
say,
that.
could you play another deck?
Yeah, I mean, that's a way to win, but I don't know. I think if you combo out on somebody doing some stupid four card combo, and it does something stupid, people aren't upset to lose to that. So you can still beat everybody and not make people not have fun. And it's actually easier to build a stupid stacks deck or something like that. It's easy to play EDH where you win and nobody else has fun. It's hard to win and everyone still has fun. So
Yeah.
challenge yourself to build a deck where you're not going to have fun by depriving everybody else of fun. Because who
Yeah, makes
doesn't like a big
sense.
insurrection? Who doesn't like
Oof.
every creature on the table getting sent back at everybody? Like, that's a fun way to win, I think. It shouldn't be. Would you think, like, you're like, oh, great card. I played a whole deck and you played one card and beat everybody. But for whatever reason, when you smash everyone with an insurrection, nobody complains, in my experience. So I like to win in a way that everyone has fun. If you have a million power of Hydras on the table, that's fun. And it's still like usually a finite but arbitrarily large combo that gets you there. But for whatever reason, people like big stupid stuff like that. So I still think I'm a Spike at heart, but I don't want to play Spike type Magic. Like the only spiky Magic I play is Limited now. Whenever I feel like it, but I don't play like competitive Constructed anymore, and I really don't miss it that much. Because honestly, I have so much else to do in the Magic community. Like, when I have time to actually play, I don't want it to feel like work. I don't want to feel like I'm playtest grinding 100 games with the same two decks. Because it used to feel like a job. And that's another thing. I think when you play casually, you don't have to play EDH casually, but I mostly do. When you play casually, you just plan to have fun. You're not trying to accomplish a goal of, I'm trying to figure out this matchup or I'm trying to prepare for this. You're just wasting time having fun. I'm sitting with my friends drinking beer, eating pizza, and playing EDH. I'm not turning Magic into a job. So that I used to be like that, and I'm happier now that I'm not.
Yeah, that is really the allure of EDH. You're just having fun and enjoying yourself, and not being crushed by infinite number of goblins. I'm a bit jaded, but So
what does that make Primal Surge? Is that
Primal
like...
Surge? No, that's good. That's a good thing because you have to really work for it.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, people tell me that, I mean, I play Primal Surge Karador, but Primal Surge is just there. It's not really... The only way it's built around it is that the whole deck is just permanence. But I'm not crazy about tutoring it and ramping to 10 mana as quickly as possibly as
yeah,
I possibly can.
That's what I've noticed. You can play Primal Surge and get people with the Primal Surge. They're like, yay, Primal Surge! And then the next game you play with that deck, you really don't want to be casting a Primal Surge.
But Nixon, I noticed that your playgroup is usually a bit more spikier, so I don't know what they're actually complaining about.
No, oh, they're complaining that it's a one-card combo, but it's not. It's a 99-card combo.
Yeah,
it's people playing Grand Arbiter Ghost in the Fort. It's people playing Purphoros and things like that. I don't think they have any right to complain.
And Titania, you know, of the combo
yeah.
variety.
Of course.
With Dark Depths and all that shenanigans.
So yeah, I don't think they have a right to complain. When you
no,
played with us... when you played with us a bit more, I was just like, okay, you cast Primal Surge, with what do you combos out with that? Okay, let's play the next game. And just that. I don't mind
like,
losing.
I just really... Yeah, I have it in... it's like a card that I don't normally use, but when things become really stale, then I just...
Yeah, sometimes
throw
the game...
it out and end the game.
Sometimes the game needs to end. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes the game needs to be over.
So,
and when the game ends, you can play with a new deck. So why wouldn't you want to play
that's
a new
good.
Deck?
Yeah, that reminds me of when we were actually having a tournament, a free-for-all. And I played Super Friends, 5-color Super Friends, with like 15 Planeswalkers and 40 lands, a couple of ramp, and everything else was just mass removal. And that game lasted for, I think... 2.5 hours, and we didn't have a timer for that round.
Oh,
so we were just free to play it, and we just had to end it at one point.
That sounds terrible.
That sounds really terrible.
It was.
But you know what? There are a lot of EDH players that love that. They'll make these Reddit posts bragging about, our game lasted 3.5 hours, and I was like, that sounds terrible. Why didn't you play 7 games in a 3.5 hour period?
Yeah. I mean, to each his own. Each playgroup is its own entity, so...
But if it was a really fun...
I have 22 decks built, and I played one of them for 5 hours.
What?
If it's a really fun and interactive 2.5 hours, then it's okay.
But wait, let's pull up. 5 hours?
What?
Jason said he played the deck for 5 hours.
Sure didn't. That was a hypothetical scenario.
Ah, okay.
I don't think I'd last 5. I think I would... put a gun in my mouth after like 4, so.
Why your mouth? Put it in the gun of the person who's making the game slow.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Oh yeah.
Just
you didn't do anything wrong.
You're gonna pass priority now.
So, you like big creatures and all that. What do you actually hate? What archetype do you hate?
Mass land destruction. Don't do it. If you can end the game playing an Armageddon, fine, but you can't. You can't end a game. You can just make the game take longer, and you can make it turn into a top deck war. That's terrible. Stop doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's like they're going to win, but not soon enough.
Depends on the board. I've seen people mass land destroy all the lands just, you know, on the whim. And I was like, oh, goddammit. You
well,
don't
I
have any creatures, nobody does.
Yeah.
Let's play
you,
it.
Just because you can play Armageddon doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, you shouldn't play Armageddon, period, I think.
I mean, that's what I don't like.
Selected land destruction is good. Just, you know, kill that thing.
I don't even mind Crucible Strip Mine, you know? I don't mind stuff like that.
Yeah.
Even if it can feel oppressive to one person. But, like, yeah, blow up that utility land, you know? Play Aftershock or Fissure or Desert Twister or something like that so you have the option to keep them off of Gaea's Cradle. But don't blow up every land so you get some guy's reliquary tower. You know, you don't have to blow up 30 lands just to make that guy discard.
Good grief. So when you go to the man cave, what is the method you use to build your decks?
What do you mean?
when you go to the mana cave, when you have to, you know, make a new deck, what is actually the process that goes behind it?
I almost always build around the commander. So if you figure out what commander you want to build, there's not always one obvious way to build it, so you just figure out what you want to do. And I always end up adding way too many cards because that's just how I build. So I'm like, everything that's going to be good with this archetype goes in the deck, and then I kind of pare it down based on, I don't know, kind of redundancy I might not need, or stuff that if the mana curve is way too loaded up at a certain amount, or if I've just got way more mana rocks that I need for like a two color deck. I tend to over add mana rocks and not have enough land, but that's just me. Usually there's too many obvious cards, and then you have to pare it back a little bit. And if I'm trying to do too many different things, I can cut an entire sub-theme. But for the most part, it's really obvious what to add and harder to know what to take out. And I just sort of pare down to 99 that way. But it's always built around looking at the commander and saying, what do I want to make this do? And even if I don't get the commander out, I still want it to do a certain thing based on what that commander's good at.
Well, Niksha, got any more questions for our guest?
No, I think that about covers everything.
Well, let's move on to the spoilers, shall we? Because today has been a good day for the spoilers.
Well, this whole week was a good day for spoilers.
Yeah, this was a really good week. And I'm really loving this set.
Well, I'm just going to say right now about the Gitrog monster. First thing that when I saw it, I was thinking about a frog tribal deck, but then I searched for frogs. Turns out all the frogs are really bad.
So
also, the monster isn't blue. So there are a couple of frogs that are kind of good. The Simic one that turns other creatures into frogs.
Omnibian.
Yeah.
Hypnotoad, you mean?
I think Gitrog is the Hypnotoad.
No, Heroes doesn't hypnotize anything, he just kills.
He just eats everything, yeah.
Yeah. So, now that we're actually talking about the Gitrog monster, you mentioned it earlier, Jason, all the crazy things you can do with it. So, should we actually read what he does?
Yeah, if you want. I mean, I'm sure everybody knows by now.
Yeah, but Niksha, you were so hyped about it, you take it.
So, the Gitrog monster is a 3 generic, black and green, 6/6 legendary creature frog horror with death touch that has, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice the Gitrog monster unless you sacrifice a land. You may play an additional land on each of your turns, and whenever one or more land cards are put into your graveyard from anywhere, draw a card.
Good God. This does so much. So much.
So at first I didn't notice the from anywhere part, and it was already good. It was already good enough. Then it's from anywhere, it was like, mind blown. Okay.
You know what I like? They put Groundskeeper in this set.
Yeah.
That's a fun little combo. But what are the other cards you want to use with this?
Cycling lands.
Definitely.
Time you cycle a land, you draw two cards. Seems good.
Mini Ancestor Recall is good, especially when they can't counter it.
Life from the Loam.
Mesmeric Orb. Mesmeric Orb, actually.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. But any dredge cards?
Any dredge card, yeah. Especially, what is the dredge land called? Deckmore Salvage?
Yes.
That's actually really good with this. Crop Rotation.
Titania.
Oh, Titania, yes. All of the 5 trees. And just regular fetch lands and Evolving Wild type lands.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this with Worm Harvest also. Like, you're going to have lands in your graveyard, for sure.
Might as well. Good grief. This is.
And also, there's that new land. Can't remember what it's called. The Drownyard. That's you can play from your graveyard for 3. The Drownyard Temple.
Yeah.
You can just put it back into play from your graveyard and keep sacrificing it on stuff.
I just remembered, you know what's a good card with this general? Constant Mists. Does with anybody remember that?
Quantumists.
It's a fog that you buy back with sacrificing a land. So why wouldn't you fog and actually, you know, draw a card?
You would. You would do that.
Yeah. I mean, I like Constant Mists just on its own, and with this general good grief.
Yeah, you got your fogs and your frogs. That'd be a good deck.
Oh, God.
Sunstone also.
Yeah.
You sacrifice a snow-covered land, but, like, why not just play snow-covered lands in the deck?
Also, Dust Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really liking this deck, actually, now that I think of it.
Also, Anurid Barkeeper.
Say what?
Anurid Barkeeper.
Remind me.
Bark Ripper.
It's a 3-mana, it's a frog that has Threshold, that gets +2/+2, and since you're sacrificing all your lands, you're going to get Threshold right fast, and it's a frog. So, yeah, that's a thing.
Frog tribal.
Common from Judgment.
Yes. It's a frog. It's a frog to serve its frog overlord.
Oh, it is errated to be a frog beast.
None of this thing about Threshold. What is that squirrel called that becomes a 7/7 when you have Threshold? Does anybody remember it?
No.
Yeah, damn it, I'm going to...
A squirrel?
Yes, a squirrel.
Croson Beast.
Yes, that thing. So basically, it's a 1/1 for 1, if I remember it.
It's a 1/1 for 4.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 1/1 for 4. It's 3 generic and a green, and it becomes an 8/8 when you have Threshold.
It's not, you know, anything connected with this commander, but I just remember it with Threshold and all that.
So now I'm just going to have to search all the Threshold cards for this.
I mean, you're playing in Golgari colors, might as well play with your graveyard.
But right now, I'm just seeing it as a one-off, as a card in Karador, because it draws cards, and that's cool.
Yeah, that's a thing, actually, yeah. So, what's next that you guys seen today, or last week?
Under the floorboards.
Oh, yes. So, what does it do?
It's a 3 generic and 2 black for a sorcery. It has a madness cost of X black. So the generic effect is put 3 2/2 black zombie creature tokens on the battlefield tapped and gain 3 life. But if you paid the madness cost, you get X zombies and X life instead. So it's
you kind of roboted out on the if you paid the madness cost. Can you read again?
I'll read that again. The whole card or just that part?
That part.
Okay. But if you paid the madness cost, instead you get X zombies and X life.
That's so good. And the fact that you can actually pay madness as an instant if you discard the instant speed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, they come untapped, don't they?
Yeah. They come untapped.
No, they kept down. They come
untapped. They come untapped. If you're playing it at the end of their turn, they might as well come in untapped.
Yeah, and you gain bunch of life.
It couldn't hurt. And and if you have, which one is it? Sanguine Bond or Exquisite Blood? Whichever one makes them lose life when you gain life.
One of those.
Yeah.
I can't remember which.
I tend to only play one, not both.
It's too easy.
Yeah, but I don't know how to feel about it, because if you don't tutor for it, it doesn't feel as bad, because you're not going to get it every game. You'll get it, like, maybe one out of every 4 or 5 games, and people won't mind that much. But still, I don't play them both in any deck I run currently.
Because you're a decent human being.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I just...
Oh, wow. Decent enough.
I don't want to get ganged up on. It's about self-preservation. Like, you can get somebody game one, but then everyone's going to dogpile you game two.
Yeah. As they should. So, one thing caught my eye. Seasons passed. A new Grim Mythic for 4 generic and green. It's a sorcery. Return any number of cards with different converted mana costs from your graveyard to your hand. Put Seasons Past onto the bottom of its owner's library.
So clearly what you do is you birthing pod until you get to your Myogens of Life's web, I guess. And then you sack that somehow and replay it. And then you Seasons Past, get the Myogen back, play the Myogen, and then put everything else into play, I guess. That could be cool.
Yeah, even without Myogen, you just rewrote a huge number of cards.
Yeah, but it's, you also leave yourself really... open to tunnel vision.
No, well, it's tunnel vision. It's tunnel vision.
Tunnel vision.
You know what will be the best thing, actually? When somebody plays this and then you twin cast it. That'll be good.
Yeah.
That almost doesn't seem necessary, but...
No, when somebody else is playing it.
Yeah.
Might as well, why not?
Have one but for really, everybody.
Yeah, I like regrowth effects, and this is a really good one.
Yeah, but yes. Still, would you really play this over a council, over Praetor's council?
If I'm having Birthing Pod, might as well. Because with Seasons Past, you can actually get those cards back into your hand and actually play them that turn.
That's a huge difference. Two mana difference.
It's a lot. Sometimes it's a lot.
I guess.
That's just my two cents.
I think it's a good card, and I think people are really excited about it. Anything that lets you regrow multiple cards, it's
silly. Yeah. It's a reason to be excited for. So, next card.
Well, next cycle of cards. We have a new land cycle.
Do we?
Yeah, we have... what is that? Allied? Or... Allied. We have five new allied colored lands. That...
I'm calling them hand lands.
Some are calling them jazz lands.
Some call them rev lands because you reveal.
Oh, God.
Peak lands.
So what do they do?
They all enter the battlefield tapped unless you reveal a land of their type. So for the blue and white, for the blue-white one, you have to reveal a plains or an island card from your hand. And if you do, they enter untapped. So it's like those tribal lands that enter tapped, but these are actually better.
Yeah.
Because you can actually play them outside of the tribe.
Yeah, I mean, you could have done with the other ones, but you knew that they were coming into play tapped.
And for Port Town, you can reveal, like, a Tango land, you can reveal a Hallowed Fountain or a Tundra, or, you know, there's... It doesn't say basic, it says Plains or Islands, so that gives you a lot of flexibility, too.
They're pretty good. Probably going to be used in EDH.
I mean, they're going to be in some of my decks. So if you're going to play Guildgate, why not play this instead?
Why do you play Guildgates?
Well, I play 10 Guildgates because I plan to win with Maze's End.
Okay, that's another thing, but usually why do you play Guildgates?
Because my decks are inexpensive because I have a lot of them.
I prefer basics, actually, to Guildgates.
If it's a two-color deck, I'll be more likely to play a Guildgate.
I'm skeptical about that.
Well, I don't really care about my turn one.
Yeah, I actually care more about turns four or five and things like that. I'm a little disappointed when I need, let's say, fourth land, and it's a Guildgate. Oh, damn it. I wanted to play a thing, now I can't.
Well, sure, whatever suits your playstyle.
Yeah, I guess. So, Jason, what's the next card that tickled your fancy?
Well, there's so much. For EDH, though, I'm tempted to say Fevered Visions, because that was Brainstorm Brewery's preview card. you threw that red in Nekusar.
Yeah, pitch it. What does it do?
It's a one generic, a blue and a red for an enchantment. At the beginning of each player's end step, that player draws a card. If the player is your opponent and has four or more cards in hand, Fevered Visions deals two damage to that player.
Well, you're being nice and giving cards to your opponents. It must be a bad card.
And as a Nekusar player, you're like, have all the cards you want.
Yeah.
So lightning bolting your opponent and getting to draw a card yourself seems fine to me.
Yeah, it's all right. But the art looks so black.
I think that'll look good foil.
Oh, that'll be wonderful as a foil.
Dude, there are so many artworks in Innistrad that look good foil.
Yeah. I'll mention a card that everybody freaked out for the first 3 seconds that they seen it, and then figured out that it was actually a bad card. Invocation of Saint Raft. Invocation of the Saint Raft. Generic white and a blue. It's an enchantment aura. You enchant it on a creature. Enchanted creature has, whenever this creature attacks, put a 4/4 white angel creature token in flying onto the battlefield, tapped and attacking. Exile that token at the end of combat.
I'm not impressed.
Nobody is. If they will just for three seconds. Oh my god, it's Saint Raft. Oh, he doesn't have Hexproof or anything. Aww.
I mean, you could have been playing Moon Silver Spear the whole time.
And nobody
like,
was.
I realize Spear costs a lot, but that also leaves the Angel in play. You don't have to play it in blue-white. You can play it in any color. You know, you don't get two for one. So, like, there are lots of reasons why Spear, I think, is a better card. And no one's playing Spear. So I don't think people are going to play a worse card. Like, Bruna doesn't want this.
Yeah, and if Bruna doesn't want it, nobody wants it.
Now I forgot his name. That guy that searches enchantments.
Oh, Xur.
Xur.
He has better things to search for.
Like Necropotence?
No, like Necro or things like that. Why should he even bother with this? I mean, if you're playing some kind of janky, I'm going to play Xur just because I like him, and I don't want to break the game kind of deck.
No, are you guys
still,
excited?
You still play that. Never mind. Let's go.
Are we excited about what?
Prized Amalgam.
Oh, what does he do?
He is a one generic, one blue, one black for a zombie. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield, if it entered from your graveyard or if you cast it from your graveyard, you can return Prize Amalgam from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped at the beginning of your next end step.
I mean, it could be a role player in Grimgrin decks. It's nothing to be especially excited for, but free dudes are free dudes.
He's value,
yeah. And River... Yes, finish.
He can't block and he can't really be in a combo. So I'm just like the more I think about where I'd actually use him, like the less I like him.
Like I said, he isn't particularly exciting, but
yeah, made that returns at the beginning of the next end step. I think just to avoid combos.
Combos, yeah. They learned with Gravecrawler that actually it's easy to combo with zombies.
I don't know. That's a bad thing, though. Like, just let people combo. Why not?
You know, they're changing the policies and all that for some reason. But I guess River Kelpie likes this card.
Yeah, sure.
But it's coming from graveyard. But that's one in the 99, so you can't really count on that. Whose turn is it? Nyxia's, I guess.
Oh, I'm going to go with. Going to go with the Gold Knight Castigator for multiple reasons. So it's a 2 double red creature angel flying haste. It's a 4/9. If a source would deal damage to you, it deals double that damage to you instead. And if a source would deal damage to Gold Knight Castigator, it deals double that damage to Gold Knight Castigator instead.
So, what about that this is going to?
So yeah, it is compelling to put it in Zedru and just wait for somebody to attack, you know, in a multiplayer, you just wait for someone to attack with a lot of guys but not kill him, and then you just give him the Castigator and then they die. But I just really want to digress from EDH and just say that I'll probably play this. If it's I'm guessing it will be cheap to get. I'll be playing this in standard.
It's a bad Thunderbreak Regent. Is this going to be Thunderbreak Regent 5 through 8?
No. Nope. This is going to be a 9/9 flying haste angel with assault formation.
With assault formation. Oh, you're a monster.
Oh, God. I know what's going to happen when he plays it in standard. People are just going to fire Temperate twice and kill Nyxia.
They're not going to fire Temper. They're not going to Tempest Castigator. They're going to Tempest me and kill me.
Oh, you know what I mean, meant.
Yeah, go ahead. Don't deal me 12 damage.
But yeah, it's a fun card. It's a cute card, and it has more or less just one deck it's going to go in EDH. But that deck is going to treasure it.
It's a hilarious card. I love it. Well, yeah, it doesn't have to be Zedru, because like you could Bizarre Trader this to anybody.
Yeah. But the thing is, will you play it actually in the deck when you don't have Bizarre Trader? If you're not drawing it and things like that?
Well, if somebody's at 4 alive, then yes, you play it.
I mean... Details. Let's go to the next.
There's that Eldrazi drone that switches all creatures' power and toughness until end of turn.
Oh.
There's also Manichi the Fevered Dream.
There are quite a few cards that do that. There's some blue spells that do that too, depending on who your commander is. This could be fun in a Heartless Hate Itsugo deck too.
Actually, it could. I just donate it to somebody else and.
Now it's too bad that combat damage isn't on the stack, otherwise you can just attack with it and then donate it, and then take 8.
Hit him or hit him for 9 somehow, flip its power and toughness, and then donate it.
Let's move on. Let's Behold the Beyond. For 5 generic and a black, it's a sorcery. Discard your hand. Search your library for 3 cards and put those cards into your hand. Shuffle your library afterwards.
Do you like this card?
I'm really drawn to the discard your hand part, but I've seen much better things. If I want to discard my whole hand, I have better cards. If I want to tutor cards, I have much better cards to tutor with. The only way this is a good card if you're going to combo that turn with those 3 cards, and that's it.
It's like, I guess it's Diabolic Revelation... number 2.
Yeah. Or one less.
Yeah, and you could ill-gotten gain some of the stuff you discard, I guess.
That's a point. It's not bad. It's mediocre.
Actually, I could use this in the Reaper King. Get some scarecrows in my hand, discard them for Behold the Beyond, and just search for Empty the Vaults and the
Patriarch's Bidding, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I can use it in Cedrus, I can use it in Alesha, but I don't know, I think I have better options. That's the thing.
Yeah, I think it's usable, but not really recommendable.
But then again, it's going to look awesome in foil.
Oh, yeah.
Just, most of the cards' redeeming quality in this set is, okay, they might not be as good, but they'll be looking so good in foil. So, anything else you've seen that you like, people?
Oh, yeah. Descend Upon the Sinful.
We already did cover that card. We did cover that card, but give your 2 cents.
I like Martial Coup.
And Final Judgment.
So, this is kind of like Martial Coup.
Yeah, you get a dude, nobody else gets anything.
Here's one you haven't covered, Altered Ego.
Yeah, we haven't.
I'm a Simic guy, and I just love this. So it's X generic plus 2 additional generic, 1 green, 1 blue, for a shapeshifter that cannot be countered. You may have Altered Ego enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, except it enters with X additional 1/1 counters on it. So it costs 4 like any clone, but if you pay 5, you can have your clone be 1 bigger than the creature it's cloning, and then you can scale it. It's a great thing to do. In a Krufix deck, this would be stupid.
In Animar as well.
Oh, yeah, Animar. It's like, you have an unblockable creature. Yeah, exactly. You have a Blighted Agent. What's that?
I was just going to say New Azuri, I was just going to mention him. I was just going to mention the New Azuri.
Yeah.
Good grief. You know what's a card we really need to mention, actually? Triskay Decaphobia.
Oh, yeah.
It might not be a really good card, but it's the best card ever. So Triskaid Decaphobia. Yeah, 3 generic and black. It's an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, choose one. Each player with exactly 13 life loses the game, then each player gains 1 life. Or each player with exactly 13 life loses the game, then each player loses 1 life. Like, so good.
You know what I don't like about cards like this?
What?
They only print these in standard when there are pain lands.
Yeah.
Like, I used to have a Orym's Chant Isochron Scepter deck and for Extended, and I would Cunning Wish for Hitetsugu Second Right, just as a joke. Just to have, just one spot on my sideboard devoted to that. And in Standard, I never killed somebody with Hitetsugu Second Right, because they would always like, I'll tap Battlefield Forge, I'm at 9. Like, I could never get anybody. But in Extended, I got people quite a few times Cunning Wishing for it. But, like, the fact that you can sculpt your life total with Painlands and Standard right now makes this a little less good, so that's too bad. Because if you don't have any hope of killing anybody, then this is just like a really bad Citadel siege.
But it's so good. I mean, it's bad, but it's so good.
I want to kill somebody with this card so bad.
It'll happen to people, and they'll be really salty after it.
Oh yeah, can you imagine in limited when your life totals at 13 and you know this is gonna happen?
And there's nothing you can do.
There's nothing you can do about it.
You're just staring at it and like, ah. But I like.
Igor.
Drops of blood 13. Yeah.
You kind of.
Yeah.
You cut out.
Out.
Yeah.
Oh, I mentioned the art. It has so many 13s on it.
I think it has 13 13s.
Yeah. The cutlery, the blood, the broken glass.
The letter T.
Yeah.
And the each player with exactly 13, like that, those sentences have 13 words.
Yeah. Such a good card.
It's just, I can't believe, I can't imagine how many effort they actually put into making this so it would be so perfectly aligned.
I mean, it's Innistrad. That's what they do here.
Yeah, I guess they were working on it for the past 4 years.
So, what's the next card you guys want to talk about?
Ever After.
Yeah, that's such a good card. Read it.
It's 4 generic and 2 black for a sorcery. Return up to 2 target creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. Each of those creatures is a black zombie in addition to its other colors and types. Put Ever After at the bottom of its owner's library. Lose to tunnel vision.
Worth it. Worth it.
So it seems like maybe this is a cycle?
I hope so.
Of seasons past being too good not to be mythic?
Yeah. I hope they continue the cycle. But
seems like if it's going to be a cycle, I imagine they're going to do something with the bottom of the library at some point. At least one card. Maybe there will be like a creature that when it dies goes to the bottom of the library, so it could be good with a certain commander.
Grenzo. This is just an upgrade to Rise from the Grave. Much better upgrade.
Yeah. Or maybe it's a worse Rise of the Dark Realms.
Actually, it's a worse Victimize, because you don't get to sack a dude. They come into play untapped. That's a good thing, but still. Sacking a dude is never bad in EDH.
Still, I could see playing this.
Oh, I'm going to play it. I'm definitely going to play it.
It always brings back two guys.
Yeah.
And if they work, and if they work well together, then that's such a flavor win.
I mean, you can always get, you know, Triskelion and Mikaius.
Yeah, if you want to be that guy.
Yeah. Well, luckily I don't have Mikaius. And I don't ever plan to get him, so... Hooray! But yeah, you can get so many good things with it. And especially they have good ETBs. Oh no, always you can get two gods from your graveyard.
Yeah,
what are gods doing in your graveyard? They can't be killed, come on.
Milling, I guess? Or sacrificing effects. I actually sometimes like to bury alive certain gods and then bring them back with Karmic Guide.
That's a strategy, alright.
Well, yeah. Why should I pay the mana cost?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No,
I
wasn't
going to go out of
say...
turn, but I wanted your opinion on something they printed. And the Ulwenwald Hydra.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? It's like a fair prime time, kind of?
Yeah, really fair.
Yeah, maybe too fair.
Maybe too fair. Yeah. Well, we still have Eldrazi Displacer and Deadeye Navigator, so who knows? For those who don't know, it's 4 generic, 2 green for a Hydra with Reach. Ulwenwald's Hydra, its power and toughness are equal to the number of lands you control. And when it enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a land card, put it on the battlefield, tap, then shuffle your library. So it's clearly no Primeval Titan. Reach is not nearly as going to be as good as Trample. This doesn't feel like a Hydra at all, and it only gets you one land and only when it comes into play. But...
And it comes tapped.
Yeah.
They wanted to give EDH people a prime time, I think, but not make it prime time.
I think this is too not prime time. This isn't even going in my Hydra deck.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, if you're going to abuse the blinking, I guess you can do that. But it's still not that good.
Yeah.
Because you can't even use the land you get off of it to fuel the Displacer or the Dead Eye Navigator. I guess unless you're playing Amulet of Vigor. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those are cheap now.
Yeah, wonder why. it's not a good card, it's not a bad card. It just hits the spot.
Why is it a Hydra?
I don't get that at all.
Maybe they would just want the Hydra in set, and that's it.
Yeah, they have to put a Hydra in every set.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they think that's what casual players want.
I mean, I don't mind Hydras.
I like when they're good. Every once in a while, it's like they don't even know how to make a Hydra, because sometimes they make them just way too good.
Yeah.
Lifeblood Hydra is so good.
Yeah. And that Hydra that gets double the counters on each upkeep, of each year upkeep.
Colonian, I think?
Yeah. That's also good.
No, Colonian is the one that doubles when it's attacking.
Oh, it's the attacking creature. Yeah, so that...
Even better.
I have both of them.
Really good.
So this Hydra is so good that we actually managed to talk about other Hydras more. Is that what I'm actually getting from this?
The best thing about this Hydra is it reminds you that you like Hydras, just not this one.
You know what's the card that I actually do like? Forgotten Creation. For 3 and a blue, it's a zombie horror. It has Skulk. And at the beginning of your upkeep, you may discard all the cards in your hand. If you do, draw that many cards. And it's a 3-3.
Yeah.
It's I love weird. This.
It has Skulk, but you don't need to hit them with it.
Yeah, you don't really need. It's just the icing on the cake.
It's like a Forgotten Creation, so you just forget that it's there. So it just skulks around.
I love that this is the mini effect.
Yeah. If you want, sure. If you don't, well, nobody's forcing you. And I really like discarding my whole hand and drawing more cards, so... And it's the beginning of your upkeep, so you actually get to draw a card on the draw step.
I mean, this could be like a storm enabler. If you throw a bunch of cantrips in the yard and then just, like, fill your hand back up. This could set you up for a really big Sins of the Past or something like that.
Oh, also, Sphinx's Tutelage is a card, so that's a thing.
Discard 7, draw 14.
I'm loving this card. I'm just mad that it's not black, honestly.
It's not a very black ability, though. Like if
I know it's not, but I want it in Alesha, so you know. It's just me being greedy. So yeah, anybody else got anything else?
I'm still thinking about this uninvited Geist.
Oh,
I see what they did there. So uninvited Geist is a 2 and a blue for a 2/2 creature spirit with Skulk. So it can be blocked by creatures with greater power. And when uninvited Geist deals combat damage to a player, transform it. And when it transforms, it's a unimpeded trespasser. And it's a 3/3 that can't be blocked. So I'm just thinking about this, but I'm trying to think of a way to put it in my ninjas. I mean, it's not really a ninja, but it's an evader.
Yeah.
I just kind of, you know, I want to put it, but then the flavor would be ruined. And flavor is the only thing that matters, right?
In those ninjas, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean,
but I just love the flavor of this card. It's your fault that you have a spirit haunting you because you opened the door. It's your fault.
Knocking was simply a formality.
Yep. He was going to haunt you anyway, but, you know. This whole set looks really Bloodborne-y, by the way.
Okay. I haven't played Bloodborne, but yeah, I'll agree on
but
that.
You've seen the art.
Yes.
We'll take your word for it.
I haven't played it as well, but I've seen enough people play it, so that they actually know the artwork and all that.
How do people have time to play console games?
I don't own consoles, so, you know.
Well, how do you, where do you find the time between Magic and League of Legends? I don't have time for anything else.
I haven't played League in like 2 months because of certain things. I haven't been able to play it for 2 months, and I actually don't miss it, sadly.
I'm an EDH player. I just play ARAM. It's the EDH of League of Legends.
Yeah, basically. You just doodle around and that's it.
All right, I got three pentakills in the same game with Talon. I love ARAM.
Oh, and there is one card we actually have to mention because it could be playable in EDH. A Simproder. For two in a red, it's a devil that has menace. It's a 3-2. And at the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library. Any opponent may have you put that card in your graveyard. If a player does, Simproder deals damage to that player equal to that card's converted mana cost. Otherwise, put it in your hand.
That could be playable.
Yeah, where's Bob?
Yeah, I mean, people normally, and they said for this card, like any card that lets your opponent do the choosing is a bad card. But this one, it's like they have a choice to either take damage, and wait, so it's either they take damage or you draw an additional card.
Or you
So
never
what?
draw another land card again.
Oh,
If you miss them on your draw step. But you still get your draw step, so you can't get locked out by this, so that's good.
yeah. Plus, you can always put this in a reanimator shell. So, do they want you to have your big fat in your graveyard or in your hand?
Well, they're
Either.
probably going to choose the hand.
Yeah, but then you can still cast it. So you're getting
Yeah,
a
but they're
huge
not going
fatty.
to take this mana cost in damage, and then it's attacking in damage.
Yeah. I don't. I like the card.
I
There's
don't know
something
what to
appealing
make of
to
it.
it. Yeah, but there's something appealing to it. I don't know what, actually.
Fortunately for me, the review I did was finance based, and
Oh.
in the US this is pre-selling for like $32 a playset. So I'm like, nope,
Yep.
don't like this at $8. So
Yeah.
I don't have to figure out if it's a good enough card because $8 is going to be wrong no matter what. So,
Yeah.
I mean, if it's another Dark Confidant, if it's another Abbot of Carol Keep, I mean, $8 is still too much. So, I think I don't know. I think the goblins from the last set are better. The 3/3 where you get a card out of the graveyard and recast it.
Oh, they're much better.
I like
Much,
that a
much
lot
better.
better than this. So, like that was an exciting EDH card.
I mean, I like Snapcaster Mage much more than I like Bob, so that's why I like the goblins.
If my opponent like mills my insurrection and then takes damage, it's not much of a consolation. I
Yeah.
would rather get the spells I want. So if they're already losing, it's a win more, but if you're not in a great position and they're making the decisions for you, it's gonna feel pretty bad.
Yeah. So I think this is enough from the spoiler.
I think I know why you like it, Igor.
Why?
Because he's a devil, so he reminds you of Tybalt, your favorite planeswalker, right?
Yeah. Because Tybalt has blue in its mana cost, right?
He might as well could have. He draws cards.
And not really, he doesn't.
Nahiri draws cards.
Now he redraws cards, yes. That's good, girl. Unlike Tybalt.
Who
You
has
know what's.
plus one lose the game? Yeah.
You know what's a, you know what's a funny thing? We all hate Tybalt, but we managed to talk about him on each episode. That's just funny to me.
I'm still waiting for him to make an appearance in this set.
No, he won't make appearance in this set.
Didn't he get killed?
I hope
Yeah,
so.
that's the rumor
I thought
that
Sorin killed
Garruk
him or
killed
something.
him.
Or Garruk.
Garruk.
Oh.
Garruk killed him.
Well, at least Garruk did something good.
Hey, Garruk did a lot of things good.
Yeah, but he killed Tybalt. That's a really good thing to do.
Okay,
So
guys.
let's move on to the next subject we should talk about, and then we should call it a night. Let's talk about the commons and uncommons in EDH. What commons and uncommons do you like to run in your decks? Anybody wants to start the conversation?
Maybe you will. so we know we're into.
I think maybe my favorite uncommon that plays like a rare is Perilous Forays.
Maybe in Omnat deck.
Shattergang Brothers, Nath, like it does a lot of work.
It you know, does.
Having that as a sac outlet's just really good. And like turning a creature that's gonna die or a token into a land, so you improve your draws and have more mana to power your stuff, is really good. You know, if something's about to die to a spell or combat damage, you might as well sac it. And you know, if you've got something that has an effect when you sac it, it's really good. So Perilous Forays, honestly, it does so much work. It feels like a rare sometimes. I'm never upset to draw that.
Yeah, I'm happy that I'm getting a Japanese one from Puka Trade. I finally managed to snatch it.
Nice.
Yeah. So, Niksha, anything on your mind from things like that?
Yeah, all of the ninjas ever. But if we're going to be specific, I'm not going to name one ninja. I'm just going to name something that's not. It's Cloud Pirates.
Yeah.
I just love it for the art and just the fact that people just feel uncomfortable when pirates are hitting them and they can't do anything about it if it's turn one.
Yeah. If it's turn eight, it's a bit less good, but still.
But still, they just look at the art and everyone is just amazed by the art.
It's the folio art. You have to love it.
They kind of remind me of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They all have their own weapon. There's four of them, I believe.
You know what's a card card group that I really like at Common and Uncommon? Evoke Creatures.
Oh, yeah.
They do so much work. Like Shriekmaw, Moldrifter, Ingachur.
Yeah, Moldrifter is almost like it's a staple in almost every blue deck.
Yeah, every blue deck I have, I want to play it.
Actually, they were even really good in they were good in Standard.
Yeah. Plus, in EDH, you have so much more bouncing and sacrificing those things. Plenty, so you can use them in much bigger ways than you could in Standard.
Yeah, because like, blinking a Moldrifter is fair.
Yeah, or just play a Moldrifter with Evoke. And then while it's on the stack, second to Perilous Forays, or things like that.
Yeah.
It's dirty.
Yeah, it's dirty, but good grief, so much value.
I mean, there is...
Yeah?
Go ahead.
No, you
finish. Let's just say, I actually wrote an article a while ago, I just found. January 29th of 2015, I wrote an article called Uncommonly Good, where I talked about some of the uncommons I liked in Fate Reforged, but the latter half of the article was... uncommons that I like just in general for a 75% EDH decks.
Oh, could you link it in chat so I can put it in show notes?
Yeah, so there are quite a few good ones that Bellowing Tangleworm is sticking out to me. I think Bellowing Tangleworm is pretty unfair.
Oh, he's really unfair. We have a lot of green stuff in your decks.
Yeah.
Just a second. Great. I'll be right back.
Okay. I mean, giving all of your green guys intimidate can be really backbreaking.
Oh yeah, he's archetype of unblockability.
Yeah, we need that archetype. Also, since we mentioned them, they're actually really good in EDH archetypes, especially the black one and the green one.
Yeah, they're all pretty good, and they have a solid body to boot too, so they're not worthless. I actually really like the enchantment creatures in Shattergang Brothers because I play a lot of. I play a lot of Dictative Erebos effects, you know, Great Pact, stuff like that. So when you sacrifice it to the enchantment mode...
They're still sack a creature.
They still sack a creature.
Yeah, that's also a lot of value. I mean, the more I think about it, the more I want to build Shattergang Brothers, just because of things like that.
It's so slow, but it's so good.
Yeah, but you play it more in a stacksy way, I guess.
Yeah.
But nothing is moving the very kind of stacks.
The good thing about Shattergang Brothers from a 75% perspective also is if somebody's way ahead, you can bring them back in line with everybody else.
Yeah, just target that person and you have a lot of enchantments. Well, not anymore.
Yeah, you can usually hurt them in a way that's not going to affect everybody else as much. Sometimes. If they're just ahead with everything, then
yeah,
you're gonna make yourself pretty unpopular. Like, blown up the guy who's super ahead, blown up one of their artifacts, and then the guy who's got one artifact gets screwed. But for the most part, Shatter Gang Brothers is just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it got a lot of new cards in Commander 2015 also.
To the table. Yeah, Meron brought a lot to the table. And she...
Yeah.
How good is she, in your mind, now that you're talking about it?
Meron?
Yeah.
It's, I think, the first or second most popular deck built on EDH Rec. Like, everybody's building Meron. It's far and away demonstrating that it's the best pre-con. I like Mazurek, too. Not a lot of people are building with Mazurek as their commander, but certainly they're including Mazurek in their Meron deck. And those cards just complement each other so well.
Yeah. I mean, Meron is the new hotness and all that. I like her a lot, but I don't know. I would like to build her, but when people actually lay off of her. Because it's boring to see all the Meron decks.
Yeah, and if you... I actually wouldn't build at 75% because of something I talk about called the Rafik problem, where if people see your commander's Rafik, they're going to assume that you're just the, you know, the...
Yeah.
The combo Rafik deck that tries to kill everybody on turn three. So
and you'll die.
Even if you're not doing... Yeah, you're going to get dogpiled. So if your deck is anything less than that good, you're not going to be able to compete with everybody at the table trying to kill you.
I usually call that the Shroom problem.
Oh, that's a good name for it.
You may tell guys at the table you're actually playing Sphinx Tribal, but everybody knows that you're going to combo out. Somehow. It just happens with Shroom.
No, it's a Lux Cannon deck with Unbender Tyne. I don't care. I'm going to murder you.
And that's a fair enough assessment, actually.
Better safe than sorry.
So next year, you're back, actually.
Yeah. You were mentioning Uncommon Worms, so... Not worms, worms. So I just went to see my collection of worms, and there are actually a few actually good uncommon worms.
Like crowworm?
No, like trench worm. Worm. I still can't
worm.
Pronounce it correctly.
So what does
I'm
it
going
do?
To say worm. Trench worm is a 3 and a black, 3/3 worm that you can pay 2 red and tap it to destroy target non-basic land.
Sometimes those lands have to die.
So sometimes you just have to get rid of that.
Urborg.
Those utility lands, that coffer and similar things. Also Pelaka Worm.
Pelaka Worm is so good.
It's really good.
I rarely run it because I don't usually play big guys' green decks, but it's really good. The life, the draw, the big body.
And trample.
What's not the life? Any more of the worms you like, or...?
At Uncommon, there's only one other enlisted worm that has Cascade. And Cascade is always fun.
Yeah, Cascade is always fair.
Well,
you know what's... you know,
card.
Yeah. You know what's a common that is really highly played in EDH? Acidic Slime.
It's so perfect because it does two good things. It threatens their best creature, so it's sort of a deterrent to them attacking you. But it also takes care of problems when it enters play, you know. And if you displace it, it's even better.
Yeah, with blinking, it just becomes really obnoxious.
It's the perfect EDH card. Acidic Slime is it's very good.
Not too high on the curve, and it does a lot. It's a card I'm always happy to put in a green deck. Also, the card I'm always happy to put in a blue deck is the Reality Shift. Like, exile in blue it's never been done, I think, before. Like that. Just targeted exile. And people often don't see it coming.
I love manifesting a really good card that they needed, too.
I mean, I'm just waiting for the day that the Blightsteel attacks me and I just, boom, no, it's gone.
It's a 2-2 now.
You can get a 2-2, yeah.
that they, like, blink that 2-2 and it turns into a Ulamog.
Aww. Then I'm just going to have to, I don't know, cry, I guess? Or get the stuff back to my hand and cast it again.
Hey, that's what you get for breaking the color wheel. You know? Sometimes it's a liability, but that happens. If you want blue swords to plowshares, sometimes that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm perfectly okay with that. Sometimes it has to blow in your face.
Well, talking about green, commons and uncommons, I think that, well, one of the staple uncommons and commons in green are mostly, like, ramp spells.
Yep.
And the one I actually like the most still is the... Now I've gone and forgot that. The elder guy that can sacrifice himself.
Oh, yeah, my elder.
Yeah, my elder. I like putting Pattern of Rebirth on him.
That's just dirty. That's dirty.
I mean, Sakura Tribe Elder also is a very good one. Burnished Heart.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that kind of does that thing at that spot in the curve. And, my elder's great.
Yeah, they're really good when you can't play instant and sorceries in Karador.
That's legit, yeah. I mean, there's also Cultivate and Kodama's Reach at that mana cost if you're playing actual sorceries.
But I like having that effect on a creature because it's not terrible if you draw it late in a deck that has Grave Pact effects.
Yeah, yeah. Again, depending on the deck. Is there anything else we should talk about, or is that it?
I see you really like your Faithless Looting.
Oh, but I just love discarding cards to draw more cards. I like playing with graveheads, I like drawing cards, and that's just perfect. In Alesha, that means usually put the two things I really want in my graveyard and just draw two more extra cards.
It's generally a really good red card, so I have actually.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing Deretta, if you're playing Felden, why not?
Even if you're not really graveyard-centric, you can just, cycle your two useless lands or something and get two better cards.
But especially in graveyard decks like Cedris or Alesha, as I mentioned, just gravy. People have started just rolling their eyes whenever I play Faithless Looting. Because they know that's what's going to happen.
You know what else rolls a lot of eyes?
What?
Rhystic Study.
Oh, gosh.
It's only a pay common, one? Guys. It's not that good.
Yeah. You pay one, you pay one, you pay one, you pay one. And after, like, three turns, two rotations around the table, you already stopped asking people because you got bored with it.
That's why I play Aura Shards, which is one of my favorite uncommons.
I'm still surprised that it's an uncommon, honestly.
I mean, think about it in terms of, like, standard and limited back in the day. Like, you weren't even going to have something to target every time you played it, but for EDH, wow.
I
like
can't hear you.
You're roboting.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh. Oh, man. All right, what I said was, think about it for in terms of back in the day when it was first designed, though. Like, chances are in standard, you weren't going to even be able to hit something every time you cast a creature.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. But looking at it now from EDH's perspective,
now Europe,
it does so much. Am I?
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah, but we got the idea.
Yeah.
Thanks for nothing, Skype.
But you just play three tokens and just blow up most threatening things.
And blow up all my scarecrows. No.
Yeah. Oh, poor you. Poor baby. If only you could get him back, right?
I don't play that much recursion. I'm not that guy.
But you play more than enough.
It's your fault you're not playing enough graveyard hate.
Meh. I don't actually mind your scarecrows.
There's a really good land graveyard hate in Bazooka Bog, which is what, a common?
Yeah, that's a common. That's one perfect common, if I ever saw one. Jason?
What's up?
You were silent. I was afraid we lost you.
Again.
No, I'm still here. Turn out to be a robot-y.
Yeah, but Bazooka Bog, I just wish if it were colorless, not black and colored entity. I want to cram it in all decks I have.
I know. I like getting it with Knight of the Reliquary.
And again, Abzan. We did it for full circle.
Knight is probably... It's in my top five magic cards, for sure.
Yeah, because, again, does so much for no cost at all.
I like when I had... when I was playing in Standard, I was playing like a Naya color deck, but I had three copies of... I can't even think of the name now. It was the guys that when you...
What did it do?
You could get an aura out of your deck if you triggered it. If you tagged a creature Sovereigns of Lost Alara, yeah. So I'm just going to reintroduce that. Back in Standard, I was playing a Naya color deck with three copies of Sovereigns of Lost Alara in it. And Knight of the Reliquary was so good in that deck because you ran Lotus Cobra. So people would mana leak you when you're tapped out, and then you use Knight of the Reliquary to get a fetch land. Use the fetch land to go get a land, tap that, and you pay the three mana for mana leak. No one saw it coming.
Oh.
You're not going to get a guy twice with that, but like that was a lot of fun. Knight of the Reliquary, just it got so big. It would get you an instant speed Sigiri Step or Bajuka Bog. It did so much work.
Yeah, like, he's always a role player.
Knight in all formats. Like, they play Show and Tell, they get Emrakul, you get Knight of the Reliquary, and then go get your Maze, or your Caracas.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
In all formats, I love it. I wish that would make an impact on Modern, but I play Knight in EDH. You know, it's a lot of fun. I like it.
Well, I played against it in, again, an Abzan deck. A guy was playing Doran just to get the colors, but he was playing Knight of Reliquary, and he got so huge. And again, he ran all the, you know, relevant dual lands, utility lands, and all that.
If only Knight could go in a Gitrog monster deck.
If only Knight was a general, with the black and his mana cost.
Yeah, there you go.
So, Wizard, this one is free, I guess. Go make us that general.
Yeah, and also, don't make it a knight, make it a worm.
Not a ninja?
No. We have enough ninjas.
Like, actually, we don't.
There's like zero legendary worms, and it would be nice if there was at least one. Like that... Tormok the Insatiable, that had such a worm-like art, and then it's a Helion.
Yep.
It's like so disappointed.
Yeah, you're really hyped for that. It's a Helion. And what is that from that worm-like thing from Ravnica, from the original one, the Gruul Legend?
No, Borborygmos.
No. The other one. The one that gets plus and plus counters for each red and green creature you control. Ulash the Hate Seed. What is he?
Oh, yeah.
He's also a Helion or what?
Yeah, it's actually a plant also.
But it's not a worm. Even though it looks worm-like.
It doesn't really. It looks like
close
a plant.
Enough. It looks
it
close
looks
enough.
Like a plant. It doesn't look nothing like a worm.
I'm trying to get you a legendary worm somehow.
Stop.
Why don't they should just make one.
Well, Nixxia should start pestering Rosewater on his Tumblr, I guess. Each day he send him a message like that.
You know, I'm looking at Ulash right now, and it looks sort of... I don't know, I could see plant, but I could also see, like, worm.
Yeah, it looks trippy. Really trippy.
Yeah. Like that's an alien race and you're about to be abducted. Probed.
And not in a good way.
Is there a good way to be probed?
Well, I don't think we are rated R enough to talk about that. We should make a podcast just about that.
Because probing implies they don't know what they're doing.
Oh, they do. I think we have veered enough from the main topic that we can just conclude that this is the end of the show. We've been running long enough. But, Jason, I really want to thank you for coming tonight. It's been a real blast.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
It's weird to me to get the person I've been whose articles I've been reading for so long to actually get and talk to, but it's been a real blast.
So yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, do you have any contact info for our listeners, all three of them?
Yeah, I'm Jason E. Alt on Twitter. I'm Jason E. Alt MTG on Reddit. I'm on Facebook. You can contact me through Gathering Magic or MTG Price. Yeah, I think that's everything. I try to be a lot of places. Like I said at the top of the show, my podcasts are Brainstorm Brewery and Money Draft. So check those out if you're at all interested in having your life improved, I guess, by hearing my opinions all the time. If you're at all interested in making Magic a little bit more affordable, Brainstorm Brewery's not really as much about hardcore finance as it is telling people the right time to buy and sell their stuff. Just look at trends in finance and, you know, not be someone that ends up holding the bag by waiting too long to sell something, or, you know, paying too much by buying too early. So we can make the game a little bit more affordable with some of our advice. So if you don't think you're a hardcore finance person, but you would like to build more EDH decks for your money, I would recommend it.
Okay, sweet. And Niksha, do you have any information you do not want to spread around?
I keep telling you, I don't have any.
I know. I just ask you just, you know, to be a nice guy.
Just in case.
Yeah, just in case. Maybe you'll actually give it someday. And as it's for me, you can contact me on Twitter on at bluesman at MTG. Actually, at bluesman in MTG. Hear me bumbling all around. I actually started using Twitter more these last couple of days. We also have a Facebook page at facebook.com/elderdragonturtle. You can check us out there. I'm trying to post as much as I can. And that's about it from us. And that will be the show. As always, this has been Elder Dragon Podcast, and the Emperor protects.
You and your false emperor.
Oh, good grief. Again, that.